David Lichtenstein here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila, broadcasting this week from Eretz Yisrael. Before we start the program, I'd like to dedicate all the Lima that Torah of this program for the Refuah Shleima of one of our listeners, a very heiliger young man, Chaim Dov Ben Risa Shoshana, who already for many months has been a Bal Yisurim, and he needs Rachbei Shemayim, and he's in the hospital now for an extended period. So let's all, with B'nei HaChabur Kecha, let's say a capital tzillim, let's have kavanah that all the Lima that Torah should be for the Refuah Shleima of Chaim Dov Ben Risa Shoshana. So we have a fabulous program this week. You know, many of you may have heard that the distributor of beer for the greater New York area, that's New York, New Jersey, is a Jewish company that nobody realized it. And for many years, he hasn't been selling his chametz, and it's been a shaila. Anybody who drinks beer, if you've been to a Shalom Zacha, after Pesach, a reasonable chance you arrive on chametz shavar al ava Pesach. B'shoigeg, which the famous Nesiva says that by a drabanan on a shoigeg doesn't need kapara. But this year was discovered that he's Jewish, and it created a big bruhaha. The OK sent one of its mashgichim, its head of kashrus, Rabbi Kalman Weinfeld, to see if they could get him to sign a Shtar Mechira, and I'll tell you the story of how he did. But this Achdus HaRabbanim came out with a fiery letter, no beer by Shalom Zachar, except the Budweiser. It seemed the turnover of Budweiser is very quick, so it's not from before Pesach. And the OK came out with a similar letter, that none of their restaurants can use beer after Pesach. As did Rav Moshe Elephant from the OU, will opine it. They didn't come out with a letter, but I believe they made a statement. Rabbi Elephant from the OU will speak about it. So we have all the interlocutors of this topic speaking. We have Rabbi Moshe Elephant, the director of kashrus for the OU, Rabbi Kalman Weinfeld, the director of kashrus for the OK, and Rabbi Shalom Tenla, the senior rabbi of the Star K. Each one will state their position. We didn't get this Achdus HaRabbanim, maybe next week. Okay, so before we go to our topic, I do like to always say something a little bit in Machshava, Chassidus, etc. And the Yemei HaOmer, the Yemei HaSfira that we are in now, is a hemshach between Pesach and Shavuos. The Ramban famously calls it, it's like the Chalamayid between Pesach and Shavuos. So we're finishing, we're in us, we're still absorbing the Yemei HaPesach. So I feel free to say a varak on Pesach, and I think it's relevant. And my question is, what's the difference between the first 2 days of Pesach? What's the message of the, you know, the first 2 days, which are Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it's separated to the Shira of the last 2 days are the Yamim of Kriyas Yamsuf. What is the two steps of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Yetzias Mitzrayim, escaping from Mitzrayim into the desert, and then Kriyas Yamsuf, out through the ocean to the other side. What are the two shlavim? And I would like to suggest, what does Mitzrayim represent? All the Balei Machshava say, Mitzrayim represents the box that we are in, the Mitzarim, the outline, the delineation, the rubric that we all find ourselves in. It's a little bit tight. What does it mean? We are afraid to go outside our box. Why didn't we take that step or do that thing new or finally get that nagging thing off our backs, off our back? Why are we stuck in it? And for mostly, it's because each of us have a pare. What is that? Those are the fears. What are the fears? We know them all. I would say the first fear is the fear of society. What will so-and-so say, I'm afraid, if my kid doesn't get into that yeshiva? If my son or daughter doesn't do a shidduch that's up to this standard? If anybody finds out that I was fired, I failed at something, my shtela, my job? I mean, we know what social pressure is about. If I don't drive that car, if I don't buy that dress for my wife, or for those who go to hotels for Pesach, if you went to the wrong hotel, not to the cool hotel, whatever it may be, machine matzah, shmura matzah, all the things that we're afraid of. We all live in communities. Which school did your child go to? What are you wearing? Why is your child wearing the wrong thing? is it true that there's somebody in your family who's struggling with depression? Oh my goodness, we never heard of that before. We are totally normal in our family. All right, stay away from the totally normal family, by the way. So what do all those represent? Those are the fears, the mitzvah. It's the fear of humiliation, of failure. Let's say I fail. How could I do that new thing if it's a failure? Goodness, am I going to be embarrassed? The fear of embarrassment. And the fear of the unknown. Oh, my goodness. I don't know. We live lives of total fear. I shouldn't say that. I should say that fear is what prevents us from going to the next level of weird lives we really should be leading or would like to be leading or would mostly fulfill our potential. It's fear that restricts us, embarrassment, humiliation, fear of embarrassment, and also the comfort. The shoe that we're in is so comfortable because of all these fears. You know, there's a story with the Brisk Rav when he was running from the Nazis and he ran from Brisk, and I believe he was in the city of Vilna. And the Dayan of Brisk, who was Reb Simcha Zelig, was terrified. He said, I have to find the Brisk Rav. The Brisk Rav was crazy Michael on Kashrus. He was afraid that the Brisk Rav would starve if he didn't bring him food. And he met the Brisk Rav after a search in Vilna. And the Brisk Rav was in a hotel in Vilna. And the Brisk Rav looked at him and he said, you know, I'm so upset that I'm not home in Brisk. And he said, I don't understand why. In Brisk, the police were always looking to arrest me. The government was always after me. I was the Rav who was Shomer al Hadas. And he said, and the Balabatim hated. It was so many tzaras in Brisk. Why did it upset me to be here on the run in Vilna, a hotel? Nobody's bothering me here. And the Brisk Rav looked at Reb Simcha Zelig and he said, you know, I see now that when you're at home, as uncomfortable it is, it's the devil you know. He said, and that's why when you leave, even if it's the most uncomfortable situation, you would still be capital. That's Shatam Ebliyein Kfarim B'Mitzrayim. They didn't want to leave. You know, it says Chamushim Olu B'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim, 1 out of 5. The other 4 said, you know, it's terrible here. But we're comfortable. We're complacent. And the Brisk Rav added on, he said, Avram Avinu, the first sign was Lech Lecha. Leave, Padan Aram. Leave. Do you know what they tried to do? They tried to burn him, kill him. They threw him in an oven alive. So why is he Lech Lecha? He said, because that's what complacency is. You just get comfortable to the prison you're in. Right? So we all have a tremendous fear. But you know what? One day we have the courage. And what do we say? That's it. I'm done with it. I'm going to stop living my life to impress people I barely like, I don't care about, I don't know them. I'm going to live my life, the life I want to live. I'm going to leave my fears behind. I'm going to leave my fear of failure behind, humiliation, social pressure, the unknown. I'm out. I'm out of here. I'm going to live my life the way I was supposed to be. When I was a child, my parents looked at me. They didn't want me to live a life of fear. They looked at me with a sparkle. You could do something. So you do it. And you leave Mitzrayim. You say, I'm going to leave it. And what happens? You leave. And then 3 days later, V'hine Mitzrayim Noiseya Achareyim. It comes running. You thought you let go of it? It's coming right after you. You know that Napoleon, you were sure you're going to leave behind, you're not going to eat that black and white, whatever it may be, you're going to leave. No, it comes running after you, it's glistening at you, right? The fear comes shining back 3 dimensions. And what happens? Pari Nesei Achareyem, and they're caught between the fear and the yam. They're in a tight place. Why? The yam is the future. You have to make a road. The fears are in back of you. What does the yam represent in this story? You know what the yam represents? We all want a clear path. And what is the yam? You try to walk in water. You know how hard it is to walk in water? It's swimming burns 10 times the energy of walking. Why? Because it's not. So on one hand, they have this maze, a road. There's nothing in front of them, and in the back of them are their fears. And what happens? And Nash, the Gemara says in sight, everybody said, everybody was afraid to go in. I can't go in. I can't go in. I'm terrified. There's no path here. Nachshon Aminadav jumps in, and he says, Hatzilei kibo mayim adnafesh. And what happens? They went by Yabasha b'Soychayam. They found the road through the ocean of life, through the mystery, the unknown, the scariness of life. So there's two parts to Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not enough to leave the fear, because if you don't have a new path, if you don't have action, you don't create something new, it's going to catch you. Just leaving it is not enough. You have to find a yabasha b'sai chayam. You have to find the courage, a bias towards action to find a new path. I'm leaving X, but leaving X isn't enough. Where are you going? And that is what Kriyas Yamsuf represents. So here we may have fear. We left behind our fears. Say the baydai chayiv kalav liris esatz bekeliyata. But where are we going? Are we going to put the time in and the energy in to create that new path? Or are we going to say, I left it, but do nothing? You know what? In that case, it's going to come back and bite you. Okay, that's my vart. So before we begin, I want to start asking one riddle a week. And I'm going to leave you with a riddle, and then we'll go to our topic. And here's my riddle for the week. The Shulchan Aruch says, in Tav Pei Tes Beis, we're going to ask about Sfiras HaOmer, not to count Sfiras HaOmer Bein HaShmashis. In other words, when it's dusk, Safik Yaim, Safik Laila. You're not sure if it's day or night. It's a Safik Midrabanan. And the Mishnah Berurah explains. He says, even though Sfiras HaOmer Bezman HaZeh is a Drabanan, so why don't you say, Seikid Rabanan Lekula? So he says, so count then. He says, it's not correct to be machdis yourself into a Safik Lechatchila, even Midrabanan. Midrabanan, we don't nichdis into Sfakis. Right? We want to be even Midrabanan. We want to be above Safik, so don't count Bein HaShmashis. Here's the problem. The Mishnah Berurah Hilchos Tzitzis, Simen Yud, Sivkat and Chazayin, discusses the following problem. For a beggar to be chayiv in Tzitzis, it has to be split. It has to have a slit. It has to have four corners, which is why our talus cotton is totally open on the sides. It's four genuine corners, or a talus guzzle. What happens if you have a beged that the slit is only halfway up, or less than halfway, like a frock? Why doesn't a frock need tzitzis? Some say because the split is less than half. If it's more than half, they round the corner. Let's say you would have a kapata that's only a little bit. Kapata from tzitzis. If it's more than half, it's chayiv, it's considered open, it's called, has four corners. Less than half, it's not. What happens if it's exactly half? So then it's a safik midarais, so with the chayiv and tzitzis. And misafik, we put on tzitzis. So we put on tzitzis, but we don't make a bracha, and we don't go out Rosh Hashanah, because if it's not chayiv and tzitzis, and you go out Rosh Hashanah, you're carrying the tzitzis, because they're not needed, and it would be a shayla of haitzah. So the question is, are you allowed to go out to a Carmelis that's only a Drabanan with this beged that's 50-50? So, and do you say by a Drabanan, Safik Drabanan Lechatchila, you could go out, or you shouldn't go out? Now, according to the Mishnah Berurah and Hilchos Sfiras HaOmer, even by a Safik Drabanan Lechatchila, we don't do it. And yet in Hilchos Tzitzis, what does the Mishnah Berurah say? If it's 50-50, and it's a it's a safik whether you chayiv and tzitzis or not, you're allowed to go out into a Carmelis with iser of carrying is only a drabanan, because by drabanan lachatchila you say safik and you could go out. In Hilchos Sfiras HaOmer he says safik drabanan wa machmir and you don't do it bein hashmashis. Safik tzitzis, you go out to a Carmelis and we say safik drabanan wa mekel and you go out. What's the difference between the two? Okay, now let's go to our topic for this week. And the topic is we're going to be discussing Chametz Sha'avar Alav HaPesach. Everybody knows that the Gemara in Pesachim has a machlokes, whether it's a Drabanan or a Daraisa. The Shulchan Aruch in Simin Tav Mem Ches Paskins, that Chametz Sha'avar Alav HaPesach is just a Drabanan, and it's because of a Knas. But even so, if you're over on it, Bein B'Shayeg, Bein B'Einus, we still punish. We still make a gether. I shouldn't say it's a punishment, but it's a gether. Chametz Sha'avar Alav HaPesach is asur. Here we have a case where somebody sells the chametz, right? What's the story we're going to talk about? It's somebody who's an irreligious Jew who sold the chametz and continued to work during Pesach. How do we view such a mechira? It's machlekes and machreinim. Ramesha was making it a number of different times. The Shvus Yankiv was making. On the other hand, other achreinim were machmir. So you have the difference of opinions, and this is the exact case. So we're going to hear from the Rabbanim, all the details and the debate. So this is a fantastic show. Enjoy it.
We have the honor of having with us on the phone Rabbi Moshe Elefant, who is basically in charge of all the kashrus of the OU, which means just about everybody listening to this would probably weigh 20 or 30 pounds lighter if it weren't for Rabbi Elefant. Welcome, Rabbi Elefant.
Including me.
Yes, but that's true. You aren't basically in charge of all the kashrus.
I am. Well, the one that's really the head of the OU is Rabbi Ganak, and who's the CEO, and I am below him as COO of OU Kosher.
Okay. So Rabbi Elefant, there's been a little bit of a brouhaha recently where the OK gave a hechsher on a beer distributor. And from what I understand, is the story is the beer distributor sold his chametz. He's a fryer Jew.
Well, Rabbi Lichtenstein, I don't want to interrupt. I'm going to because it's not exactly that they gave a hechsher.
Okay, so
they did a mechira.
Okay, you're correct. I apologize. They did a mechira. Why don't you tell over what happened, and then I'll ask you.
Okay, so I'll tell you the story because it's been consuming us for the last week, certainly, and even before. We became aware.
Okay.
When I say we, I mean the major hashgachas, the heads of the major hashgachas became aware about 2 weeks or so before Pesach that Manhattan beer distributor here in New York, which distributes about 75% of all beer here in New York State, is Jewish owned. And therefore, we have a real issue of Chametz Shavuot of a Pesach. You know, you're talking about beer. For the record, they don't only distribute beer, they even distribute other alcoholic drinks, which are all chametz. So it's a real issue. So we had a meeting of the heads of the major hashgachas under the umbrella of ACCO. ACCO is the Association of Kashrus Organizations, and the heads of the major agencies sit in that executive, and we meet to discuss serious kashrus issues on a very regular basis. And this was obviously a serious issue. One of the agencies volunteered to try to reach out to the owner of this company to sell his chametz. They attempted to reach him, and they got the message that he wasn't interested in doing it under any circumstances. Rabbi Daniel Levy of the OK, in his Shabbos HaGol Drasha, at that point, we reconvened. At that point, we, the agencies, reconvened and decided that we're going to have one more try at it. And the try we would take would be a reverse trial, a reverse move, where we would call the various beer companies that we certify. Not that many beer companies are certified, but there are some, most notably Coors is OU certified, and ask them to use their influence on this individual to talk to us and perhaps agree to do a Mechiras Chametz. And the agreement was that if we were unsuccessful by Monday before Pesach, we would have to make an announcement to that effect that this is a Chametz Shavuot of Pesach issue. Rabbi Daniel Levy on Shabbos HaGadol spoke about this apparently in his drasha, in his shul in Crown Heights. And two people who daven by him, and one of them is his employee, hearing the drasha, decided that they're going to try to take matters in their own hands to see if they could convince him to do a mechira. So Rabbi Weinfeld, who is an employee of Rabbi Levy's, spent Motzoi Shabbos and Sunday, and he gets a lot of credit for doing so, finding out where this individual lives, tracking him down, and ultimately convincing him to do a mechira. This was Sunday. Sunday evening, I get a call from a colleague in the world of kashrus who says, we have great news. He has agreed to do a mechira, but there are two issues that are now coming up. One issue is that in New York State, probably not only in New York State, the law is you can't sell somebody who has a license to sell beer cannot just transfer that license to someone else. It only can be transferred to someone else who has a license. And that he was saying that he's willing to do a mechira, but only if he could find somebody who has a liquor license, a beer license. So I was called and asked, do I know anyone who's not Jewish who has such a license? So I obviously don't know such an individual, but I called somebody who I thought may know such an individual, and I was, Baruch Hashem, successful, because this person told me, well, his number two man in his company is a non-Jewish individual, so he just could sell it to his number two man. That was first issue that was resolved. The second issue was the regular Mechiras Chametz that we all do wouldn't work here. Because what's the Mechiras Chametz that we do? We take whatever chametz we have at home, whatever chametz you decide to sell, you put it wherever you put it in your home, and then you go to the Rav and tell him, I have this chametz in this place, I'd like to sell it and not have ownership for it throughout Yom Tov. Here, this individual was not up to closing his business for the 9 days of Pesach, actually, Erev Pesach and the 8 days of Yom Tov. So the type of mechira that needed to be done is a much different type of mechira. It's a mechira of the entire business. And the entire business was sold to, was to be sold to a non-Jew. So this is not the typical shtar that any Rav has. And a search began to find who has such a shtar. Rabbi Eckstein, for the Belz Adayin of Bar Park, who was representing the OK, was the one that was collecting the shtaris and evaluating them, and finally chose a shtar that he thought would be best and that this individual would agree to sign, which he did. And on Monday afternoon, right before Pesach, the shtar was signed and the mechira was done. For the record, for just for a piece of information, this individual put on tefillin then, and it was the first time he said he put on tefillin since his bar mitzvah, which was over 50 years ago. So that's the story, the sequence of events. The issue is, do you rely on that mechira? Because there was a mechira done, but the business was open.
Yes, but the business was owned by the person who.
Correct. So now we have a very fundamental shaila. And this is a shaila that we at the OU, you know, I'm here 30 years and I've dealt with this many times. What do I mean when I say I've dealt with this many times? We have a question on all applications for Hashgacha that come into the OU. And the question is, are you Jewish owned? And many people who apply to the OU, companies who apply to the OU, think because we want to give preference to Jewish-owned companies. The truth is just the opposite. Because we at the OU and other Hashgachas as well feel that if you're selling your chametz, but it's not a real mechira. This individual wasn't really looking to sell his business. It was sort of a legal instrument to be a loophole to be able to keep the business open and not have chametz shavuot of a Pesach. So the OU, based on a psak from Rabbi Yoshua ben Soloveitchik, has never agreed to that. So whenever a company applies to the OU, which is Jewish-owned and manufactures chametz, we tell them if you're going to want to have OU supervision, you're going to have to be closed for Pesach. And many companies have declined OU supervision for that reason, if they're owned by people who aren't ready to close the company if they're manufacturing chametz. There are other hashgachas who are more lenient and feel that it's a mechira, the mechira is adequate, and they could be opened on Pesach. And that's really the situation here, where, you know, we all realize that this individual had no intent of selling his business in a permanent way. Is that good enough or not?
So, Rabbi Ellison, let me ask you a few questions.
Sure.
Isn't it fair to say that most people who sell their chametz, even if they're not businesses, really have very little intent of selling their chametz? I mean, can you must know.
So many people have asked me that question.
Did you think of one case where the guy ever came to collect his chametz in your entire life?
Yeah, but let me ask you a question, because I'm sure you sold. Well, number one, I'm going to answer on two levels, because all Rabbanim, including myself, get in hundreds, hundreds of questions about the chametz that they have left over as Pesach approaches. Is it chametz gomer? And many people don't sell chametz gomer for that reason. So we're starting with a much, by many people, I'm not saying by everybody, and certainly not by stores, we're not dealing with real chametz. We're only dealing with kalim and tarovas chametz and chametz noiksha, which obviously is much less of a shiloh than chametz gomer. It doesn't apply
even
to everybody.
Even though, Rabbi Elephant, most people do sell their schnapps, right?
Yeah, but we know the Pnei Yeshua that holds that schnapps is not considered chametz gomer.
But we also know the Mishnah Berura disagrees and says it is.
Right, but it was schnapps, and there are people that don't sell schnapps. But you're right, there are many people, probably most people, that sell schnapps. Schnapps developed is Mekel. Many people rely on the Pnei Yeshua and other Achroinim that held it's not chametz gomer. And I'm not saying so. That's number one. Number two, and again, it hasn't happened to me. I presume it hasn't happened to you. And I'm selling my chametz for many years, as I'm sure you are as well. But let's say the individual to whom the chametz was sold were to come to your home on Pesach and say, you know what? I'm the owner of the chametz. I'm taking it all. But there's a price. He has to pay for it. And he gives you the price that it's really worth. So you indeed, let's use your example. He's going to take all the schnapps you have in your, wherever you keep your schnapps. So if he'll pay you for what it's worth, are you really that attached to that schnapps?
No, the answer is I would absolutely give it then.
You give
right?
it to him, and he'll pay you, and we'll all live happily ever after. Here,
right.
the individual is not going to sell his business. He's just not ready to sell his business, even for whatever price. So it's not a perfect comparison, but it's a fair comparison.
Yeah, but I would respond to that in two ways. First of all, you could put a price in the shtar that is such that the guy would actually agree. His business is worth $50 million. You say, you'll sell it for $150 million. There is some price that if it's intelligent, the guy would say, are you crazy? I'll take the money, I say, right? The shtar just has to be done wisely. And second of all, the klal in kinyanin is dvarim shebelev edim dvarim. If a guy finds a shtar, and La Lach is binding, it's a star.
Right. So the counter argument, the counter argument.
By the way, what would Moshe write?
Right.
Question.
That's from Moshe's position. And again, the counter argument is that the star is not really the kind of star that is, if he was really looking to sell his business, and you're correct, everything has a price. And if the price is right, I'm sure he would sell his business, but it wouldn't be done the way the shtar was written, you know, around the table with some rabbonim. It would be done with lawyers, with a negotiation. And that's why, and again, I want to emphasize, the okay and the rabbonim of the okay who affected this mechira deserve an incredible amount of credit. They deserve credit, and they deserve also that they were able to pull off what almost nobody else could. Nobody else could get this individual to agree, and they did. So that should not be underestimated and understated. The question is, do you want to rely on this mechira or not? It's a very simple question.
So, Rabbi Elephant, let me just ask you a few questions. This guy owns the business for 50 years, and the OU just found out about it this year, I understand from your story?
Not just the OU, all of us. Right.
Everybody. So let me ask you a question.
I don't know if he owns the business for 50 years. He hasn't put on film for 50 years. He owns the business for many years. He owns the business for many years.
Let me ask you a question. Most of the people, including yourself, you have schnapps you sold for Pesach, right?
Yes.
Now, you could assume there's a 75% chance as a rave that it comes from this guy.
The schnapps is not. He's not strong at
schnapps. What?
No, he's primarily a beer. He's primarily in the beer business, not in the schnapps business. It's unlikely that you have schnapps from him.
Okay, do you sell beer too, or just schnapps?
I actually don't even drink beer, and I don't sell beer, and I wouldn't sell beer if I had beer in the house. Because beer, I haven't seen anybody. Although there is somebody that suggested to me the other day that beer should be I would consider beer chametz gomer, and I don't sell chametz gomer. But if your question, we'll cut to it. If somebody has beer from last year, if somebody has beer over last year, he has a Shiloh.
Yeah, everybody who has beer would have the same problem. They have beer. It's a good likelihood case for this guy. So it's Chavez Shavarol of Apesa. So it's anybody who has any beer, basically, for the last year has to worry about this. Is that fair to say?
No, he only has to worry. Let's sharpen the point. He only has to worry about beer that he bought last year in the period between Pesach and Lag BaOmer or Shavuos, because by then all of his stock has been depleted, his stock of beer, his inventory of beer, and any beer he bought after that was not beer that he owned and wasn't Chametz Shavuot of a Pesach. But so to answer your question succinctly, if someone has in their home beer that they bought in New York State last year between Pesach and Shavuos, or Pesach and Lag BaOmer, he has a very serious, he indeed has a serious question.
So then let me ask you a question, Rabbi Elifet. Are there problems with Blias of Chametz Shavuot of Pesach?
Well, I don't know how many people cook with beer, and I don't know if there's a problem, especially if it's bottled. So if you were cooking your beer, your pot wouldn't become mason. No, I don't think there's a problem with Blias. They don't answer.
Why?
Because Chametz Shavuot Pesach is only a knas to Rabbanon, and I don't think the knas applies to Blias. Chazal did not make the knas on Blias.
Okay. Okay. Now, did this guy enter his place of work on Pesach, or he?
Absolutely, sure.
That he sold on.
No. He was there. He was there.
So the owner was there as well. So I have.
You mean the person who's the real owner, the person who sold it? Yes, was there.
Now, you know, famously, Reb Moshe was matter in this very case, right?
Reb Moshe was clearly matter. I mean, Rebelski.
So my question.
Rebelski made an argument that maybe Reb Moshe would not be Michael in this case, but that's not the simple reading of the Gris Moshe.
Simple reading is and he does it twice.
Right.
Most
correct.
Clear.
Correct.
I'm asking you, Reb Moshe is accepted as the Mara D'Astra of America. So even though you have many, there's the Marsham and the Marim Sheikh, I can give you a whole peckle of Poiskim who don't agree with Reb Moshe. But don't we sort of in America, Eman, that Reb Moshe is the Mara D'Astra of America?
So I'm going to respond to that.
Why would the OU be interested in being?
Because as you know, probably as well or better than I, Rabbi Ganak and many of the Rabbanim, certainly who were here at the OU in the earlier years, were Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Soloveitchik very much disagreed with Reb Moshe on this subject. And they very much are in line. And that's been the OU policy because of Rav Soloveitchik's psak all of these years. Knowing that Reb Moshe disagreed. And what apparently is as well as the case, there's a tshuva in the Divrei Yoel, which also follows that opinion. So apparently, you know, there's a huge Satmar community and there's a huge community that follows the psakim of the Divrei Yoel, who also was not in favor of this. So I'm chas v'shalom, not in the slightest way belittling Reb Moshe or belittling your comment about Reb Moshe as being the Mara D'Astra of America, but, you know, the OU never obligated itself to follow Reb Moshe's Pesachim, Lekula, and Lechumra, nor did other agencies.
Okay, now there are many other Pesachim besides Reb Moshe who pass in this way as well. You have the Chelkis Yankif, or Breish, who was a very big Pesach, you know, took on like...
Again, this is a legitimate halacha machlaikas. It's a legitimate machlaikas with legitimate two sides of opinion. And therefore, in my humble opinion, this is not to be viewed as a scandal. This is not to be viewed as a tumult. This is to be viewed that we became aware of a problem. An agency took the initiative to do the best it can under the circumstances. And now every consumer should make it his and her own decision. Do they want to rely on the Setter, like you keep on repeating, which is based on a psak of Ramosha, who's certainly not to be discounted, or do they choose not to rely on the Setter and not buy the beer? And it's no different than any other decision that people make on halachic matters following different rabbonim and different paiskim.
Okay, and we should also emphasize to our listeners that it's a knas rabbanan. So this issue is really about, you know, it's a suffix on a knas rabbanan. Do we simach and remoisha and rabreish? Or like Rav Soloveitchik and the Maram Shik and the Marsham, who are machter in this particular case.
Right. Very well said.
Okay. Well, we thank you very much for your avodas hakodesh and for clarifying this in such a succinct way.
Thank you. Nice speaking to you again.
Kol tov. We have on the phone with us from New York City, Rabbi Kalman Weinfeld, who is the food service kashrus coordinator for the kashrus organization OK. Welcome, Rabbi Weinfeld.
Shalom aleichem, everybody.
Rabbi Weinfeld, we heard this story about the largest beer distributor in New York, and how he signed a shtar mechiras chametz, and how the OU is uncomfortable with it. Could you give us a synopsis of the issue?
So, first of all, I don't know if this is correct, if the OU is not comfortable, the organization that wrote something that they are not accepting in general such a mechire, not only this specific mechire, it might be the Starke and not the OU. The OU didn't say anything officially. The OU support us, they called me, they wrote a very nice, we had a meeting of many rabbonim, they was meshabeach the shtar, I got many phone calls from Mary Dayonim, even from Williamsburg Borough Park and other Kreisen, but I don't think this is the correct metzias. I don't know exactly what their policy is, but they didn't went out with any statement like that. Isach de Sarabonim was, yes, publishing a letter against this mechire. And maybe I should begin with this letter of Isach de Sarabonim. And, you know, sometimes they are very, very choshi verabonim, tamid chachomim, and ofor ani leragleihem. And when I did the mechire, I didn't did the mechire as a big rov or a big talmid chochem. I did it for shliches, like to do something for the Eibishter, and to be matzil klal Yisrael in New York State should not be over chas v'sholem on the issur of chometz she'ovar all of ha'pesach. I was in touch with big dayonim and rabonim to help me. They should provide, they should send me the best shtar what can be. I had only a few hours until the meeting when I met Mr. Bergson, and I told him, please, I don't know about it. This is not my field. I'm doing food service, and please help me with the best shtar. One big Dayan that is always helping me and is answering Mishailes from Monsi, he was very, very, very busy, and we need to remember that this was the week between Shabbos HaGodol and Pesach, and this is the most busiest week of the year for every Yid, and of course, for Rabbonim Moirei Hoyroi Beisrael. So Rabbi Eckstein, the Dayan of Belz, a Choshiver Dayan, one of the poskim and one of the poskim that helps the OK kosher when we need like an outsider Rov to tell us a psak. And he helped us. He spoke to other Rabbonim also. And the situation was that was almost not Bichdei Sheyase. And you need a shtar. And you need a shtar in English, and a shtar should not say too much and should say everything, because if the goy and the yid and everybody there will see that it's too complicated, maybe that they will be, might be that they will be scared to sign anything. And the old maise was a big ashkochepotis and a nest, the way how I convinced them, because this was not me, this was mamesh, the Eibishter alone, like the story of Pesach, ani veloy malech, ani hu veloy acher, so the Eibishter himself did everything. And like, I was once in a sheve broches, and every time when a father tells advertere, he says, I thank the Eibishter for helping me making this chasin, because it's a lot of it. So I was once in a sheve broches, and the father says, you know, this time the Eibishter didn't help me. So everybody was shocked, I was shocked. And he says, no, don't understand me, not good chas v'sholem. I meant to say that the Eibishter not only didn't help me, he did everything. I didn't even help the Eibishter. This story I did nothing. The Rebbe did everything from the beginning until the end. Ich bin given a garnish, a garnish that was making a shlichus of the Rebbe. And if you will have a few minutes, I will say about the story, but let me finish about the aloha klipat. And yes, if it would be more time, my B will be a different star, another few points of the star. But by the way, many rabbonim, I don't want to be magzim, but at least 5 or 6 rabbonim that I spoke to them today, after they spoke with me and they asked me exactly the details of the mechira, they said, wow, so it's in ganz in another picture. It's in ganz in another story. For example, they didn't know that I was mefaret to the goy, that he is mekabel kinyan and he is koine everything with the deposit. And the guy that was with me, my friend Rabbi Nosson Sternberg, is a businessman that we have a chavruse together, we have a kvias together a few times a week. And I took him, because I didn't want, so when I went to the office of Mr. Bergson, he came with me. So when he saw that I'm being mefaret so much about the kinyan, about it, and I told him that it's not only the chometz, it's the binyonim, it's the business, it's the properties, it's all the storages, it's the 5 facilities and everything. So he was quetching me, you know, I don't know how to say it in English, a knip. He was knipping me, he was kicking me in the feet, like, and he says, maybe don't say too much because they will be scared to sign. So I said, no, I have to say it halachically because Rabbi Eckstein told me before I should say everything and I should be mefaret. And I told him that the deposit that he paid is only a deposit, take, but with this deposit he's coin everything. And another few details that it's not the time because it's, I believe it's a short time that I'm going to speak to you, so we need to accomplish everything. So if somebody wants to be machmir, we have the klal that kol machmir tova yolo vrocho. If somebody wants to be soymech, so many sniffim to be soymech and to be matir this beer, and not only abediyevet shebediyevet shebediyevet. And there is a chroinim that are saying that if somebody was thinking that he is making a mechire, and by a mistake was not a mechire, if mitzad the rov forget to sell, or whatever the case is, but the person was thinking that he is making a mechire, so because the whole union of chomes shover all of a Pesach is a knas, that chachomim was koivei a knas, so loy konsuhu chachomim, there is no knas for this person, because he did the right thing, he was thinking he made a mechire.
Here, who says that, Rabbi? Who says that, Rabbi?
There is a chroin, he was saying, and I don't have the Mar Mekemes now, but I got it from a few rabbis that they told me that. And my
because Shulchan Aruch says even by an oinus,
yeah,
and the Prima Gadim says even an oinus gomer, it's chamer mm-hmm. Sha'avral of a Pesach. Okay, continue
yeah,
the story.
I understand what you're saying, but here was a kinyan and was a serious thing. And when I wanted to write, like, it's a little schum about the mechira of Pesach, so the owner told me, but you are doing a serious thing. This is something that is going to help the all Jewish people in New York State. You need to write a normal amount, write down $1 million. They was taking everything very seriously. It was like a bit of a stomach ache.
So, Rabbi Kleinfeld, how much was the mechira for? After the deposit, how much was the mechira for the
$1 million for the 8 days of Pesach, with making later on a cheshbon exactly what will be the oitzoyes, the achnoses, the kinyan, the mechira, and everything, and to see what is the profit, and then to make a cheshbon.
So $1 million for 8 days, and you're assuming then that he doesn't make, I guess, profit of $50 million a year, which would be, I guess, 8 times 360, you know, into 365. So for him, it wasn't, if the guy would have come with $1 million after Yom Tov, Itaka would have given him the Hitzos and Achrosos of Yom Tov.
Yes, yes.
So then why do you feel that, why would somebody be Machmer? If the guy did a real Mechira and the price was a real price, why would you say somebody should be Machmer?
So some people will be machmir not to buy anything what was b'mechire, like the Starcade. This is what they say, Rabbi Heinemann holds, that don't use. So to tell you for sure,
so
that
wait,
we don't...
I guess we'll talk to the Starcade, but does Rabbi Heinemann sell whiskey? Does he sell schnapps?
I don't want to talk about what Rabbi Heinemann is doing because
okay,
I'm
we'll
not in Starcade position.
Okay.
And I respect him, a big Talmid Chochem, and he knows what he's doing. But let me tell you, we have many facilities in New York State. I don't know if I should mention the name, like Restaurant Depot. You have CNS. You have other places. They do the same thing every year with other respectable organizations. But no one talks about it. This is something that went out public because one reason, because the guy for the 20 years didn't want to talk to anybody about Mechiras Chometz. Should I tell you the story how I did it?
I'm wondering. Rabbi Kleinfeld told me if I'm wrong.
What?
Rabbi Weinfeld, I apologize. He told me if I'm wrong, but the Sfarim, and I honestly didn't have that much time to prepare for this, but let's say the Marsham or the Maram Shik, who are Machmir, are talking about where somebody sells their chametz and then continues to do business with their chametz, right? So you're talking about where the guy sold the entire business.
Why?
So
and
he,
is
so
something
he sold
about
the entire business, he could take a job in the business that he sold it and then afterwards actually collect the $1 million. So it could be that, let's say, even the Marim Shik would be mined in this case, because the Marim Shik's case where he sold the chametz, he didn't sell them in the buildings and the business at that time.
What you said just now was a conversation between me and another. I don't want to mention Rabbonim, you know, Rabbonim are not comfortable with saying names and v'chulu v'chulu. But this was a discussion between me and another very choshev Dayan from Satmer that I spoke with him an hour ago, and he said this word, what you just said now. So many in Yonim that are not similar to the situation of the Prime Golim and of the Maram Shik and others, and here we sold the whole entire company and not only the Chometz.
Right, that's very different than the cases that they're talking about.
Yes, Rabbi Lichtenstein, can you give me a few minutes to say the Ashgoche Protis of the story, how I got to this?
Of course, absolutely, go for it, sure.
So, you know, I live in Crown Heights and I'm davening at the shul, the name of the shul is Beis Eliezer Yitzchok. The rov of the shul is Rabbi Levi, the head rabbi of the OK Kosher. Of course, you hear his name. He gave a Rosh Hashabbos HaGodl, and he spoke about this issue. Everybody should know, if you are expecting a Sholem Zocher after Pesach, before Shavuos, buy beer now, because you're going to have a problem to buy beer. And it's a big problem. I was sitting next to my friend, Rabbi Nosson Sternberg. Rabbi Nosson Sternberg is a Lubavitcher Chosid, he's a Kapishnitzer Einikl, he's a Ur Einikl of the Kapishnitzer Rebbe, all of Hashem. And I'm sitting next to him and I said to him, I have to do something, let's do something. And he said to me, I know somebody that works at Manhattan Beer, Ayid Hashomer Shabbos, I'm going to call him. He called them Sunday morning and he said, I'm not working there anymore. But you should know there's nobody to talk to because I was trying when I worked there. I was trying to talk to the owner, Mr. Bergson, a few times, and he doesn't want to hear about it. I think he never understood exactly what needs to be done. I said, I'm doing anyway. And the morning later, I was in New Jersey after the George Washington Bridge. We have a catering hall, and I was training a few mashgichim to work there. And I was there the whole morning. And you understand yourself, the week before Pesach, in my department, we have all restaurants, we have the Kosher LePesach restaurant, we have the Chometz restaurant, we have a program in three countries, and I had 230 Mashgichim working for me, full-time job. Together, of course, together with my assistant, Rabbi Teichman, I don't know if you know him, he's from Lakewood, Rabbi Yaakov Teichman. And we worked together very, very hard, but the issue of the beer was in my head, because, you know, it's a Mirshoil L'chol HaTzibur. So I called my, I'm a Lubavitcher Chosid, so I called the Ohel of the Rebbe, the Tzion, in Montefiore Sanatory, and I asked, the office should mention in my name, I should have a tzloche to be Meshachnea, to convince Mr. Bergson to sell his Chometz. I also did, you know, some Lubavitcher people are riding in Igros Kodesh, and they asked the Rebbe Ashaile in Igros Kodesh, so I took a Igros Kodesh and I put the letter inside, and I got an answer from the Rebbe that a Purimdik answer, that in Purim there is Mishloach Molos and there is Matonos Levyonim. The Rebbe is saying that it's two avoiders, two drochim in avoidas Hashem. One is Derech HaMuser, and it's a Helike avoide, a Helike Derech, and one is Derech HaChassidus. Matonos Levyonim is more than Derech HaMuser. You're telling a person that he is a Evyon, means he needs to do Cheshuve, and there is a Gehenim, Miu Sora, Shiku Sora, and it's a very, very Helike Derech. And Derech HaChassidus is Meshloach Moles Ish L'Re'eyu, that you're giving another person a Meshloach Moles, and you are elevating him, you're telling him about the Eivishter, Da'es Elokei Avicho. I got a remez that this is the way I should work with the guy, and I like very much to bake. So I took a corner in the catering hall, and they wasn't so busy, and I called my mother in Yerushalayim, and she is Hungarian from Wien, but she's like from the Oberland. She knows very much how to cook and to bake. And I told her, please, mommy, can you give me a recipe of a kokosh cake? Because I was thinking, Mr. Bergson, a European Yid, will never say no to a hot kokosh cake. And she told me, are you crazy? Even Meshugoyim are not baking a kokosh cake between Shabbos HaGodlin and Pesach. It's chometz. So I said, but I have a very halakhic purpose. So she gives me the recipe, and I did the kokosh cake. And Mr. Sternberg, Reb Nosson, my Yid, gave me the address to the facility. Even was Sunday, I was thinking maybe he will be there. And I came, and they didn't let me in even to the parking lot. And then I called Reb Nosson, and I told him, you know, today you can find the address for everybody on Google. And I told him, please find me the address, the home address for Mr. Bergson. It's not easy because he lives in a few places. The details are not so much wichtig, but he gave me the address that he was thinking where he lived. And I was driving there, and I came, and I parked outside. It was easy to find a parking because it was on Sunday. And then I'm coming to the lobby with a kokosh cake, and they opened the door for me. It's an apartment building. And I went to the front desk, and I said, I'm here to see Mr. Bergson. I have something for him. So he calls upstairs to Mr. Bergson, and his wife answered. And then she says, we have guests. We can't see anybody now. Please tell the guy to leave what he has at the lobby. So I left it at the lobby, and then I told them, let me be very open with you. I'm here. He doesn't know that I'm here for him, Mr. Bergson, but I'm here to appreciate it because he's doing something very huge for the Jewish people in New York State. So I have a little appreciation, but I don't want to nudge him anymore. So please give me permission to stay at the lobby until he's coming down. He says, how do you know that he's coming down? I said, I don't know, but I have a prayer book. I had a Tehillim with me. I will say the prayer to God, and God will help me, and I will see him soon. So he was laughing, but he was letting me sit at the couch by the lobby. 25 minutes later, Mr. Bergson comes out from the elevator together with his guest and his wife, and I'm going to him, and I'm giving him my right hand, and I said, like in Polish, like that, Shalom Aleichem, Reb Shimon. And he gives me back, and he says, Aleichem HaShulem, how can I help you? So I said to him, I'm not here to get help from you. I'm here to give you a present. He says, what are you talking about? I said, one thing I gave you already, it's at the lobby, it's the kokosh cake. And the wife was very happy. And then I said, the other thing that I want to give you is, because you're doing so many tzedakah over chesed all over America, I want to give you another matone, another opportunity to do something good for Jewish people. He said, what are you talking about? I said, you sell beer. Beer is chometz. So he stopped me right away. He says, you know how many years people are trying to talk to me? I can't really do anything like that. I don't understand exactly what he wants from me. So I said to him, it's not a problem. He said, but I have a problem. I can't sell my company to a guy if he doesn't have a license for beer, according to the New York State law. So I said, we will talk to the rabbis. We will find a way out to do it. So he says, listen, Rabbi, I appreciate that you're trying to do good, but I'm going now to eat dinner with my family. He gives me a business card. And he says, call to my office tomorrow and we will see if somebody can help you. So I said, listen, Mr. Bergson, I'm very busy this week. I'm a rabbi that's in charge on 200 and something mashgichim. And the issue that I'm talking to you is a very, very emergency issue and you can help many other people. So please go eat. Don't even think about me when you eat dinner, but you should know, even if it's going to take 3 hours, when you're coming back to the lobby, you're going to see me there. So he was laughing, but he left. I don't think he was thinking that I will wait for him. An hour and 55 minutes later, he comes back and he sees me. So I calm him down because maybe he was upset, but I told him, Mr. Bergson, are you upset on me? So already this is sometimes the way how to calm down somebody that is upset, that he's telling him, you're showing them that you know that he's upset. So he says, no, you spoke to your rabbi? I says, yes. And what we did, he made me a power of attorney to sell the whole entire company with the chometz, with the properties, with everything for him. And he understood exactly what he is doing, and it was Mekabel Kinyan, and he says I should come to his office 1 o'clock the day later, and we will do everything fine. When I came, I asked my friend Reb Nosson that he helped me with the addresses, and he surely said he knows somebody. I asked Reb Nosson he should come with me. Like I said before, we came. Mr. Bergson was a little late. He apologized. And then he came to the office. He took us to the conference room. and we did everything, and we fixed the shtar maybe three times because he wanted, he was so serious, he says, if this is something that's going to help people, we need to do it correctly. So then he had all facilities that he had in the Bronx, in Queens, in Brooklyn, five places, I think, was the, where he sells, where he has his facilities. And he took it very seriously. He told me even in the middle that he's a little nervous about it, but he's doing this besimcha. And then the guy was asking questions, and I gave him all the details, and I explained them everything, that the deposit that he's giving is not only a deposit, but the deposit is coin everything, mamish already now. And then after Pesach, they will make a cheshbon with himself. If he wants to buy, he will make a cheshbon. It will be, and then after everything, he was so proud. And even was a Shoprite in Brooklyn that the rabbonim in Flatbush told the Shoprite before my myself the Mechiras Chometz. They told them not to buy beer in Manhattan beer for after Pesach. So they canceled an order of 380 cases. After I made the mechira, I sent to the rabbonim that was involved the shtar. So they told already the rabbonim in Flatbush that now it's fine. So they got back 45 minutes later the order of 380 cases. And for them, it's a count. So they were so happy and proud of what they was doing. So then I asked Mr. Bergson if he wants to do tefillin. So he said, you know when was the last time that I did tefillin in my life? I said, when? He said, 57 years ago at my bar mitzvah. And he said he was going to a Hebrew school in Borough, I think in Flatbush or anywhere in Brooklyn. And he was kicked out of the school. And the father went to the rabbi. The father was a few years in Auschwitz, I think 4 years in Auschwitz. And he went to the rabbi and he cried, this is my son. Who will help me if not you? And he said the rabbi was teaching him from 7 years old until 13 the bar mitzvah. And this is why he did the Haftorah. He did the old parsha, and it was the Chazan Shachris, Psukei the Zimre Shachris, El Musaf in Shul. And he did the feeling, and it was very much with instructions. He was dancing with me. We were singing Simon Tov Mazel Tov L'Chovet his bar mitzvah. And he was very, and he said Shema Yisrael, and he remembered the Shema Yisrael, almost everything Be'alpe. And then I gave him a Sefer Kodesh, and I gave him a Ma'o, and I gave him also Shmure Matze, but not only three Matzes he should have for the Seder. A few pounds, he should have enough Matze, he should not even have the Yitzirore to eat Chometz Chas V'Sholem all entire Pesach. I gave him a few pounds. And then, Baruch Hashem, the morning later, I got a phone call yesterday from a rabbi in the Bronx that he is trying always to convince him to sell the Chometz, but he's never picking up the phone. The office is telling him that, no, Mr. Bergson is not available, Mr. Bergson is not available. Sorry, first time in the history this year, when the rabbi of Chabad in the Bronx called Mr. Bergson's office, was a day after I made the Mechira, it was Tuesday. And he said, yeah, I want to talk to him. And he picked up the phone, and before even the rabbi tells him something, he says, I did it already. This is how he was proud of. So it was a mamish akidish Hashem.
Hafla de gemaisa.
Baruch Hashem.
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, that I don't see nishta maram shik, and I don't see anybody in your case would disagree. It's very different than the cases that it's harama and he doesn't mean it. I honestly, there's a lot of rabbanim, but you know, Ramosha Feinstein, the Hulk, is Yankee for matter, even by a mummer, kavachayma, by a guy who says you would put on tefillin and did a bit of distractions and ask questions. I think you did an amazing thing.
Even Ramosha Feinstein.
In general, for the last 30 years, people are being nichshol. Or for the last how many years, people are being nichshol. You saved so many people from being nichshol. If you want to be machme kemi machme zayin, but for all the people who didn't know anything, you will matzel them from a nichshol note, tens of thousands of people.
So Rabbi Lichtenstein, for to finish in a positive, all our conversation was positive, but I want to, if I did something good for Klal Yisrael, I want to wish Klal Yisrael with somebody that bischus this, because we always drink beer by a Sholem Zocher, everybody should be able to make a Sholem Zocher in the near future.
Amen. And thank you very much. It was a really wonderful, wonderful conversation. Thank you for clarifying it.
Thank you, Psura Tevis.
Cultus. We have on the phone with us from Baltimore, Rabbi Shalom Tendler, a kashrus administrator of the Star K. He's a Talmud of both Ner Yisrael and the Yeshivas Mir Yerushalayim, a musbach by Rabbi Aaron Feldman. Welcome, Rabbi Shalom.
Thank you very much.
Rabbi Shalom, we understand that the Star K came out with a little bit of a, an opposition to using beer in the New York City area post Pesach because of Shiloh of Chametz Avrolava Pesach. Can you tell us about this position?
Sure. So let me give you a little background first of the whole story of how this developed. Going back about 3 years in Maryland, we discovered that in Maryland, two of the main beer distributors were Jewish-owned. So this issue was actually something that was quite familiar to us. And at that time, we worked through with the distributors here, who were very helpful, very cooperative, to figure out exactly which beers are affected. In the case in the distributors in Maryland, no mechira was possible for a variety of technical, logistical, halachic reasons, which, you know, not for now. So in Maryland, particularly Baltimore, you know, the people here are very familiar with this issue on, you know, having lists of which beers they are and aren't allowed to buy after Pesach. So fast forward till about 8 months ago or so, when I received a phone call from Rabbi Center from the Chofke. It was actually more than that. It was actually right after Pesach last year. And he noticed that in one of the front page headlines of one of the major, you know, New York media outlets, a non-Jewish media outlet, there was a story about this individual, Mr. Simon Bergson, who owns this company, Manhattan Beer Distribution, the largest beer distributor in New York, in fact, one of the largest beer distribution companies in the whole United States, particularly focusing in New York State, because due to licensing regulations, he's only allowed to sell in New York. And he's discussing his Jewish heritage and his Holocaust survivor parents. He was born in one of the DP camps, and that he's the owner of this company. So he called me and says, you know, this sounds like it's a problem. I said, I know in Maryland you've been dealing with this. You know, can you look into this and see what, you know, see what you can figure out? So, you know, we looked into it, and together with the Chofke at that time, and it was discovered that this is taka a big problem. This company is 100%.
Let me go back every time. So, what do you do in Baltimore if the distributors are all Jewish? What do people do with beer after Pesach?
It's not all. There's the way it works in beer distribution is the, and this is in Maryland and apparently in New York and apparently in most states. As strange as it sounds, the beer distributors, each one has an exclusive, a monopoly, so to speak, on their particular brands of beer. I mean, for example, the ones who sell Anheuser-Busch, only they're allowed to sell Anheuser-Busch. They have the rights to Anheuser-Busch in whatever distribution areas they have. Same thing with, you know, all the various brands, Miller's, Coors, et cetera. So in Maryland's case, so there are four distributors. Two of them are Jewish and two are not. So there's plenty of beers that are not chametz. There's also plenty of beers that are chametz. So we put out two lists.
What do you mean there are beers that are not chametz? What does that mean?
I'm sorry. Let me correct that. There are beers that are not a problem with chametz over Pesach, and there are beers that are a problem with chametz over Pesach.
Because they're not owned by Yidden. So
the ones that are distributed
right?
by the non-Jewish companies.
You put out a list.
Exactly.
I understand. So what did you do in New York? So you say that you found that.
So in New York, what happened was that we have been discussing this situation for a number of months, and many efforts were made, as I'm sure people have become more familiar with the whole story by now, to try to get through to Mr. Bergson to sell his chametz. But apparently, no one was being able to get anywhere. He apparently was not interested. You know, he had reasons which, you know, were not invalid. You know, he had concerns about it. He was not necessarily familiar with the whole process. And if you come to somebody and, you know, you say, you know, hey, I'm here to sell. I would like to sell your chametz, and they're not necessarily religious. They don't necessarily know what you're talking about. You know, we had that in the case in Maryland too. When we called them up. You know, we tried talking to them about it, and they were very cooperative about it, but they were like, first of all, where have you been for the last, you know, X number of years that we've been in business? And second of all, what's chametz? Right?
Yeah,
you know, we're starting from scratch. They don't know what the whole thing.
Can I tell you a funny story? I had two guests by me on Pesach, two Sephardim, who came from a foreign country, and very errant. They came to my house on Pesach, and they brought me a gift. Two bottles of Johnny Walker Blue Label. That's like, I don't know, $400. They handed me on Pesach, and I looked at it, and I said to myself, you talk about Tidik Shadishma. It's a bottle they didn't bring me to Chalas on Pesach, right?
That's awkward. Wow. Okay, that's a good one.
So what did I do? I just had Kavanah not to be Kaida. I thanked them very much. I walked out, and I just put it outside the house. but it's I'd want to be mavaz of them or anything. They certainly meant good, but you talk about how they knew absolutely nothing.
Right, absolutely nothing. Wonderful people, these people, you know, in Maryland for sure. You know, I don't know Mr. Bergson personally, but in a particular case in Maryland, really wonderful, nice people, but know absolutely nothing, you know, and I'm not blaming, no one could blame them for that. But it was very awkward starting off this kind of a conversation. You're coming and asking him to sell his business for 8 days because we Jews have a problem, like, excuse me? yeah, thank you very much. Is this some kind of scam or something? So no one was able to get somewhere with Mr. Bergson on this issue. And so this was getting, you know, this was getting very close to Pesach. And there were 2 weeks before Pesach, starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so we had a number of conference calls with all the major kashrus agencies. You know, our involvement, obviously, is besides our previous experiences in Maryland, is that we do certify many establishments and caterers in the New York area, so it affected us directly. And we had many conference calls about, okay, what do we do? So we basically used the Maryland the model that we had in place in Maryland, where we got a full listing of all the things that he distributes, which is, you know, publicly listed on his website, and, you know, put all the information together explaining what the issue is, which beers are allowed, which beers aren't allowed, and had that all ready to go. In the meantime, you know, there were efforts being made to work on a mechira. This is stretching already till Wednesday or Thursday before Pesach, you know, a week before Pesach. And at that point, we said, you know, if we're going to instruct our places, at this point, it does not look like any mechira is going to be possible. And so we have to give our places time to prepare. They're going to have to either have to stock up before Pesach or understand to make alternate arrangements. We don't want to call them up Erev Pesach and spring this on them that, hey, you know, when you open them after Pesach, you can't buy any beer. You know, we want them to be prepared for this. So we sent out a memo to our places, which was the listing of all the beers that were at that time deemed to be problematic and were going to be Chametz Shalva Pesach. That was sent out only to our places. And at that point, there was no mechira there was no mechira at all thought possible. Pretty much everybody was miyayish at that point that there was not going to be mechira. We sent it out on the Thursday before, and a week and change before Pesach. Everyone else was planning on, you know, following up on it the following week, and that was how the situation was left at that point. Come Sunday, and we get this very interesting message that Roy Weinfeld from the OK Kosher Certification, you know, this amazing story that you know is published now in you know all over now, and how he was able to convince Mr. Bergson in a very beautiful way that made a tremendous Kiddush Hashem to actually sell his chametz, and that was, you know, a very welcomed surprise. At that point, a very welcome development at that point, because it solved, you know, a very big problem that we were all struggling with at that time. That is, to alert our certified places, that's easy. We can tell them this is what it is. We can give some explanation, make sure they understand what's going on. In the New York area, we're talking about literally millions of Yidden, probably, and, you know, this stretches all the way up to Muncie and Five Towns also area. We're talking about probably millions of Yidden. You know, to spring this kind of a huge surprise on people, in a sense, without causing confusion is something that's very, very difficult. So this mechira was going to be welcomed by everybody as at least an outlet, you know, that we don't have to do that. That was everyone's initial reaction when we were discussing this mechira. At the same time, obviously, as is becoming well known, that pulling off such a mechira is something that's very, very complicated, l'halacha. And that was part of the conference calls that we had originally, you know, throughout the whole process. You know, what sort of mechira could we even conceivably get? And then the whole situation fell apart. And then on Sunday, there was all these frantic calls. Okay, so he has him willing to sell his chametz. Okay, how do we structure this? Because, you know, Mr. Bergson did not want to do anything that would be illegal. Selling a liquor business is something that's very, very complicated legally. So, you know, you can't just sell it the way any Rav would sell chametz to any random non-Jewish person, because that's, quite frankly, illegal. You can't do that. You have to be licensed to sell, licensed to own, etc. So he had very strict conditions that he would not do anything that was illegal. So they ended up structuring the Mechiras chametz in the best way they could, keeping that in mind. Additionally, they ended up, you know, obviously he wasn't going to close down his company for 8 days either. But again, there's a halacha, there's many workarounds for this kind of a situation. And the Mechiras chametz was definitely performed.
So what is the issue that you're struggling with?
So I'm going to get to that in 1 second. So
okay.
At that point, so we decided that, okay, we're still going to alert our places. We're going to alert our places because Starcade policy has always been that when you have a Jewish company that's 100% Jewish owned, no non-Jewish partners at all in the company, and they're going to be operating business as usual over Pesach, we do not do Mechiras Chametz in that kind of a situation.
Even though he's selling the entire business,
correct,
or all the Hakhnasa for that period.
Correct. Correct.
So you're not Soymach on the Tshuva of Ramesha.
Correct.
And it goes even beyond the Tshuva of Ramesha, because Ramesha is talking about in a case where it's not apparent that the guy is serious. I mean, from Rabbi Weinfeld's story, it seems that the guy was very serious.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily the, you know, the details of that, you know, there's many, many details in this shtar that can be nitpicked at and can be discussed, halacha, you know, which way you want to go, whether he was willing to sign this actual shtar, well, he wasn't willing, he was just a manish shlichus. There's many different aspects to this shtar. But, you know, from the star case standpoint, and we had discussed this already in advance, is that, you know, none of that was particularly relevant for our certified places. And now this is this point that we want to make very, very clear, and that is that Starkey has never done a Mechiras Chametz. Rav Heineman has never accepted a Mechiras Chametz for our certified places. You know, a company that's 100% Jewish owned that will be operating as usual, buying and selling over Pesach. Let me give you a case point, the case we had in Maryland, and I'll show you where Rav Heineman objected to it. And you can make your own applications to the situation in New York. And again, I just want to stress, my point being is that these types of mechiras are things that are mechiras that Rabbi Heineman has always had objections to, again, as far as the Starkey using
okay.
them.
Okay.
In the case in Maryland, where we had one of the particular companies, 100% Jewish-owned company, the owner is very willing and cooperative to do whatever. Really, they said, whatever you want to do, you know, we're willing to sign as long as it's all legal. We're happy to sign, work with you, do whatever you people need to work out this issue. So the first issue we had to come up with was finding someone who legally could buy the business, someone who was licensed
okay.
to sell. So we got past that
right.
issue. We found another
right.
guy who was willing, who was licensed to sell. We got that in place. Then what do we do with the fact that they're the ones doing, the Yidden are the ones doing the ordering, and they're buying and selling items that are going to be coming in on Pesach. They don't own it yet, at this point, to be even able to sell. So it's a davar shalot. You can't make a kinyan on something that's not bal olam. So even though you have the guy now who's buying the business, right, but there's orders that are coming in now that are going to be coming in on Pesach from the guy, from let's say Coors, for example, right, which they don't own yet to be able to sell, right?
But
so there we said...
why don't you make an employee, for heaven's sakes? Employees do work on behalf of their bosses all the time.
So Rabbi Heineman has to be a real shutfist type. In general, that's his objection. He doesn't feel that taking a secretary, an employee, even an executive of the company, and making them into a shutif, you know, just for Pesach, is something that has real validity lahalacha to it. That's his shita. That's what he holds.
Well, can I ask you a question? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, who I consider the Maradasra of America, and I think most people would,
mm-hmm.
was matter this on two different occasions. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why would Rav Heineman go against Rav Moshe's psak?
Okay, so let me explain to you something about Rav Moshe's psak and the way kashrus agencies operate. Is that number one, Rav Moshe Feinstein Mat allowed it in certain extenuating circumstances. It was not something that he necessarily condoned lechatchila. It's something he held that is not necessarily mevatel the mechira if it's done, if it buys and sells on Pesach.
He doesn't write any of those caveats.
That could be, but that's what he held. And you could ask any of his family members
okay.
or Talmidim.
And he writes it twice, by the way.
I
and in neither place does he write that it's a Yedid. Okay.
I understand. I could say that with some level of authority as being his great-grandson, that I know from many of our family members, including my father, who is an attorney and has a lot of experience actually in Mechiras Chametz, because Shtaris are one of his areas of expertise. Now, when it comes to giving a Hashkacha, Rav Heineman is very makbid about not just looking for a day that holds that it works. He wants everything
right
to be without any shaila.
Here's your grandfather's lashon, okay? And this is Igros Moshe Chelik Aleph Simin Kuf Simin Kuf Meb Test. This is Ulechein. Listen to this. Bor upashet.
Mm-hmm.
Bor upashet. Shamechira kayemes. Right.
Right.
That's his lashon.
Right.
Does that sound like he's equivocating? Right.
Right. Okay.
It's actually in three places. It's in three places. It's in Ar Chaim Chelik Beis, Simin Tzadik Aleph, and again in Chelik Dalet, Simin Tzadik Hey.
Uh-huh. Right. No, I'm familiar. We're familiar. Everyone's familiar with those tshuvas by now. But again, it definitely works lahalacha. But it's not something that he held was the lechatchila way to go with anything. It was done, something that was done under extenuating circumstances. That was the only thing that was possible. That's clear. I mean, we can argue about it from day to tomorrow. But you know, the bottom line is that's what Ramesha held. That is what Ramesha held. So that point aside, when it comes to giving a hashkacha, Ramesha writes in many places himself in various tshuvas agabe various other inyanim that you know giving hashkacha has to be something that's above and beyond. You know, you want to give something that's 100% mechuder. He uses the lashon of something that could be mutter but mechur hadavar to give hashkacha to. In a sense, like for example, bittul, relying on bittul when giving hashkacha. So most kashrus agencies do not rely on bittul, even though bittul is 100% mutul halacha. But you don't give hashkacha on something. You don't put a shtempel and say this is something that's kosher. So when Rabbi Heinemann says over a maisa he had with the Satmarov when Rabbi Heinemann was in his 20s, he was asked by Rabbi Aaron to be involved in building the mikveh in Lakewood. Or one of the mikvahs in Lakewood, probably then it was the only mikvah in Lakewood. So who else in America knew anything about building mikvahs then? So they went to the Satmarov. He knew, you know, he was a mumch in building mikvahs. So they went to the Satmarov for an etza, and he told him, the first thing he told him was something very interesting. He said, He says, when we're building a mikvah, don't look in Shulchan Aruch. He says, if you already have to open up the Shulchan Aruch and take a look, is what we're doing mutter, is it not mutter? It's already puzzle. You got to build a mikvah that there's no place for a shalat to even happen. So Rabbi Hanif feels the same when it comes to Hashkacha. And that is, in that sense, he's not saying there's no way to work out Shtar Mechir in this sense. He said, of course you can work it out. And in this particular case, of course there's what to be Saimichan. And of course consumers can be Saimichan. And of course you can ask your Rav, you know, whether you should or shouldn't be Saimichan. He said, for things under my Hashkacha, I don't want to be Saimichan. And it's not, again, as I mentioned before, it's not just talking about this case. Again, as I mentioned before, we had the same issue in Maryland. And we worked out many of the various issues that would come up in such a Shtar. We found the guy that was licensed. We worked out the kinyanim on things that would be coming in on Pesach. Even the achrayas issue that would have, you know, even if the guy owns the warehouse, l'maisa, since the insurance policies are in the yid's name, right? So that would be an issue. Shulchan Aruch Mem talks about that. All these things we had technical ways of working around. But at a certain point, at that point, Heinemann said, look, there's too much footwork going on here. He says, the bottom line is, I'm not comfortable with this. I don't want to go through all this fancy footwork to get this lahalacha good, when we all know that the guy, you know, he's not really selling his company except for our purposes. And that bothers me, he said. And therefore, I he walked away from it. And therefore, in Maryland, we don't have a mechira at all.
So can I just like touch on another matter? We had spoken to a bunch of rabbanim in Queens. There was a restaurant in Queens that served a $1,000 pastrami sandwich.
Right. It was five towns. Yeah.
Five towns. And we always said, you know, it's Zoylo Vasive according to, you know, it's Shail according to the Magen Avraham, and it's an Issa Daraisa to eat the sandwich. And he asked the Machshirim, how do you give a hechsher on a restaurant that's giving a halacha a hechsher on something that's a novel Bershus HaTayre and Zoylo Vasive? It's absolutely, how do you give a hechsher? I'm curious, how would you respond to that? And my point was, could you find the shtickle Torah to be mata maybe? But there's 50 rabbanim in your vad, and they are all saying that this is under our auspices. Well, under our auspices, how do you have a pastrami sandwich for $1,000? Zel v'soive, when it's the rabbanim in your yeshivas, for them it's a week's earnings before Pesach. They can't put mata on the table.
You're asking an excellent question, and this comes up in many, many, many areas in kashrus. And this is where you're striking at a very fundamental thing that's important in kashrus agencies, and that is the following, is that kashrus agencies is not just about what's kosher and what's not. It's not just about what your policies are going to be and what's not. There's a big gray area in between in what's appropriate for kashrus agencies to be involved with and what's not. Now, making that kind of call is something that's really a really shaila chamura. And let me give you even a better shaila throughout. Let's say you have a caterer, right, that wants to, you have a company that comes to you, a couple that comes to you, and they want to get married during the 9 days, during the 3 weeks, on Chol HaMoed, on times when la halacha you're not allowed to get married, right? Now, let's make the shaila juicier. If they're coming to the kosher caterer because one of their relatives or something, or maybe a grandparent or something. They're not from themselves, but this one relative is Orthodox, and they won't come to the wedding unless it's kosher. But the chasan and kala, the bride and the groom, don't particularly care about kosher. The date is set. The date is not being changed. And if the kosher caterer can't do it, they're more than happy to go back to the relative and say, listen, we tried getting it kosher. We can't do it kosher.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll go to a trefa caterer, right? So they come to us and they say, you know, will the Star K be willing to certify such an event? So you can have varying answers to that question, I am sure, across the spectrum.
Is this halitayul l'rasha v'yamas?
There's many different. Is it really lifnei iver? You could talk to me tomorrow if it's really lifnei iver. It's not lifnei iver. You know, you can really these things have all been discussed many, many times. But this is something that you need a real paisik for. Someone with a real level of das tayra. So Rabbi Heinemann holds our policy is strict. We don't do it. If the halacha says we can't get married, then we don't do it. You're going to go trick. It's not my problem. Like you said, halteru l'ashav yamas. We don't get involved with that. So, you know, so where you, how far you extend those kinds of, so to speak, non-kashrus related issues, right, are something that really takes a certain level of das tayra of big rabbonim to paskin on. And on the other side, on both sides of the spectrum, you could hear where they want to go. One end, you can say, we do kashrus. The $1,000 sandwich is kosher. It's kosher. There's nothing more for me to be involved with. I'm not a kirev organization. I'm not a musa organization. I'm a kashrus organization.
Yeah, but
it's kosher.
You want to make a bracha on it.
Okay.
Would you serve something that you can make a bracha on, right?
That's interesting.
Do not make a bracha when eating this, right?
Okay, that's interesting. I hear that question. That's interesting.
If it's aveira to eat, it has a din of b'tzeya berach l'yetz Hashem. B'tzeya berach l'yetz Hashem. You don't want to make a bracha, yes, the Rav. So you should put a sign up. Please do not make a bracha on your sandwich.
Okay, again, these are questions that, so to speak, are above the pay grade of many... you know, of myself and other people. And this is the things that we have, Zayich HaBaruch Hashem, to have a tremendous Pesach and a Rav like Rav Heinemann involved, and, you know, we go with whatever his Hadracha is. And, you know, I'm assuming and I'm hopeful that, you know, and I know many other Kash agencies obviously have Rabbanim who they ask their Shilas to, and this would be one of the Shilas they should hopefully have asked, is this something that's appropriate for us to give a Hashgacha to or not? I know we have had situations like this come up. I can't get into details. But, you know, similar types of situations, not a $1,000 sandwich per se, but some of the details where it was like, you know, it, as they say, Shmek Epis, it's not appropriate for us to be giving a Hashgacha. And Rabbi Heinemann puts his foot down. You know, two examples I could give you is pool parties or pool side parties. Rabbi Heinemann does not let our caterers do them.
Right.
I mean, we've had many sticky situations where they've showed up and, you know, it was in a clubhouse next to a pool, open in the middle of the summer, and Rabbi Heinemann made them close the curtains, even though the pool was supposed to be part of the avira of the event.
Right.
He said, no,
right.
I will not give the hashgacha in these circumstances.
Right.
So each situation has to be
done
up very carefully.
Would you give a hefshir to a restaurant that's open on Shabbos?
A Jewish restaurant open Shabbos? Definitely not.
Yeah, the food is kosher.
Right, 100%. Right, definitely not. But again, these are things that go beyond the kashrus spectrum. Some rabbanim, I hope, have received hadracha to say, let's stop it right there. If it's kosher, it's kosher. Otherwise, you know, the rabbanim machshirim, you know, the I don't want to say higher level rabbanim, and this is something that needs a big psak in how far they're supposed to go. So Baruch Hashem,
right.
You know, we have Rabbi Heinemann gives us hadracha. I can't say what we would or wouldn't do in the case of the $1,000 sandwich. It's not relevant. I didn't ask Rabbi Heinemann about it, but that's something we would definitely have asked him about. And receive this hadracha. Getting back to the mechiras chametz, so this is also something that in la halacha, the star case position is definitely what to be samech on. And I want to be very clear that the OK deserves tremendous yashar koyach for pulling this off, because it's something that was definitely a hatzala on many levels. That people can avoid
most of the people
that they'll avoid having an issue of chametz over Pesach. At the same time, particularly for the places that we're giving hashgacha to, which again is the only place that we're focusing on, the only place we're making a statement about is for our certified places. Rabbi Heinemann is being machmir, and it's nothing specific to this case. We had it in Maryland, and he's always been very machmir about these types of situations with mechiras chametz and these kinds of companies.
Rabbi Tendler, thank you very much. It's an honor having you on, and Befrat, an edikel of the great, the Paisik of the world, or the Paisik of America, Rabbi Shafayt, it's an honor to have you with us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure.